this is Rick Telberg, and this is a CPA Trendlines podcast.
Hi, I'm Liz Gold with CPA and Trendlines. If you attended last year's New York State Society of CPAs Cannabis Conference, you may have heard our guest's opening keynote. Today on the show, we have Matt Carnes of GreenWave Advisors. Before I introduce him, let me give you a little bit of his background. Matt Carnes has over 25 years of diverse finance and accounting experience prior to founding GreenWave Advisors, LLC. Matt worked in equity research focusing on the radio, broadcasting, and cable television industries for First Union Securities. Matt also covered satellite communication at SG Cohen and in addition worked with the top-ranked consumer internet analyst at Bear Stearns & Company. This team was consistently recognized by the Institutional Investors All-America research team. As a sell-side equity analyst, Matt authored and co-authored numerous emerging industry research reports, including such names as Google, Sirius, XM Satellite Radio, DirecTV, and EchoStar Communications. Matt was also principal and senior equity analyst at Bullpath Capital Management, a New York City-based hedge fund where he was responsible for investment strategies of emerging technologies, primarily within the technology, media, and telecom sectors. Prior to his career on Wall Street, Matt held various finance and accounting positions at PricewaterhouseCoopers and Deloitte, as well as Texaco, where he worked throughout the U.S., Europe, the Caribbean, and Asia. Additionally, at Chase, Matt was responsible for implementing the bank's corporate accounting policies on commodity, interest rate, and foreign currency derivative products. Matt graduated from Fordham University with an MBA in finance and earned a BS with a double in business administration with a double major in accounting and finance from Miami University. Matt is also a certified public accountant. Wow. Hi, Matt. Thanks for being here today.
Hi, Liz. How are you? Great to be with you.
Good. I'm glad you're here. So tell us about GreenWave Advisors and why you started your firm.
Sure. So GreenWave Advisors was founded in 2014. I founded GreenWave shortly after my mom passed away or came up with the idea. I didn't officially launch it. I was working at a hedge fund that went took a turn for the worse as the whole world was turning upside down as a result of the financial crisis. And after my mom passed, I was reading about medical marijuana and some of the smaller pink sheets or over-the-counter stocks that were emerging. And I just took an interest, you know, having a Wall Street background in this sector and whether or not it would be real or not. So I took a journey up to Boston to gain better understanding of what the industry, how it was forming. At the time, it was actually the first cannabis conference. And from there, I just attended, I just kept going to more and more conferences. That summer, I went to Colorado for the big the whole industry get together, or I guess if you look at it in terms of where we are today, at the time there was about 800 people. Today, our last year in November at MJ Biz, there was probably close to 20,000 people. So the industry has grown that much.
Yeah.
I came back home and I thought, well, you know what? It's time to roll up my sleeves, put my auditor hat on and my accounting and any skills that I developed as a buy-side and sell-side analyst and really deploy that skill set into the cannabis industry, because it was my belief at the time that there would be a lot of questions when this day, when the day comes, which is where I think we are now, where we're getting a lot more interest from institutional investors and investors that are a lot more sophisticated than they were early on. And I think it's really important. I would say out of all my experience, probably the most significant and the most beneficial to what I bring to the industry today is the accounting and auditing background, because as you can imagine, the industry is very fragmented. There's very little data available, which is, you know, getting increasingly more sophisticated. More data companies are entering into the space. But nonetheless, you really still need human intelligence and human capital, because somebody has to think controls and all kinds of other issues, particularly because we're dealing primarily for most of these businesses in cash only due to the restrictions in banking laws. So that's a long-winded answer to your question, but hopefully it frames a perspective on, you know, sort of what I've done and why.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. I'm so curious as to, you know, just to back up a little bit, what your experience was at that first cannabis conference, because I know you're in New York and you went up to Boston, and I know, like, from my own personal experience, going to a cannabis conference, you're like, whoa, there are so many different elements to the industry. And to just sort of watch it grow and watch the new companies emerge is pretty amazing. But, you know, what was that like for you to walk into a cannabis conference? What struck you?
Well, you know, the funny thing is when I told, you know, friends and colleagues and family what I was doing, they thought I was losing my mind. Like, you know,
yeah.
You're not, you know, but and I really wasn't I was very unsure as to what to expect, because you clearly had the stereotypical what you would expect at a cannabis conference. But there was enough people, and there was a couple of people in the room that really sparked my interest, and it really gave me a sense of conviction that this is an industry that is going to move forward. And in the room at the time at the first conference was Brendan Kennedy, who is now the CEO of Tilray, which is, you know, a very large one of the larger Canadian licensed producers, as well as Troy Gayton, who's the CEO of ArcView. So as much as there was, you know, a lot of chuckle from my perspective as to some of the characters, and clearly if this industry fails, I could clearly write a screenplay about the type of people I've encountered along the way.
Mm-hmm.
I, you know, just really my gut just told me to just keep marching forward. And, you know, there's been ups and downs, you know, particularly because, you know, this it's really, I would say, probably the last, not even full year, maybe the last 9 months, where we're really seeing a heightened level of interest and more mainstream people, both from the consumer as well as from the investor, step in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I want to talk more about sort of your take on where the industry is right now. But so in terms of people, you know, your clients, you know, why do people come to you? What are they looking for?
Well, you know, it depends what stage they are in the investment process.
Mm-hmm.
But people come to me for advice on, you know, to help them out, figure out what would make sense from an investment perspective to help with due diligence. I have some family offices that I work with. I have some funds that I work with. Having done this for 5 years, I sort of have weeded out, no pun intended, some of the characters, you know, that, you know, are still around, may not be around much longer. So I'm able to provide some perspective on that. And also just, you know, my observations over the last 5 years, you know, what patterns, what trends are we starting to see, where I think the industry is going. I think what's really, really important for this industry, because it's emerging and there's so many unknowns, and every state operates, you know, under a closed economy, you can't pass our cross state lines and so forth. And every state, you know, operates, you know, independently. You have to be really forward thinking as to, you know, what's this industry going to look like when federal prohibition ends? And I think pretty much everybody now believes that prohibition will end. It's just a matter of timing.
So what do you think it's going to look like when prohibition ends?
So when prohibition ends, at some point, the interstate commerce will be available. You know, there won't be any restrictions in terms of moving products across state lines. So that's clearly, you know, going to be a benefit. But what's going to happen with that is a lot of shakeout. And the fact that, you know, every state has different licensing requirements and so forth, there'll be way too many growers, cultivators in the space. So we'll see a lot of, you know, a consolidation. A lot of these businesses will go, you know, out of business. What we'll also do, if, you know, assuming, well, I think the Safe Banking Act will pass, which will free up the banking, but clearly there'll be no restrictions on banking. There'll be no tax burdens right now.
That's my dog. Okay. We'll just have to edit that out, but go ahead. Keep going.
Okay. People think it was me. Also, cannabis businesses that touch the plant are subject to an extraordinary high tax burden because these businesses are not permitted to take ordinary operating expenses as deductions,
right,
only the cost of the sales. So it is becoming more and more challenging for these businesses to continue. And so the larger companies that are able to achieve economies of scale will be the survivors. So there'll be a lot of consolidation and shakeout. We're already starting to see that now, even before prohibition ends.
Yeah, consolidation. Go ahead.
We'll also be able to, have import, likely importing and exporting. The question becomes whether or not each state will then, even though the federal government may say there are no restrictions on interstate commerce, it's not clear yet how the states will respond to that, because the states really want to, obviously maximize their tax revenues to the extent that they can. And so they might not be willing, some of the states may not be willing to permit interstate commerce. In other words, they want the excise taxes for their own cultivation rather than, having another state, a neighboring state or wherever, ship those products, the flower, whatever is grown into that state. So there's going to be a lot of discussion around that topic.
Yeah, a lot of movement on so many levels. And so talk to us about how you're a resource for investors in particular.
So also what we do is we write research reports. I haven't really focused on specific companies yet, because it really hasn't been, up until probably the last 9 months or so, anything really of significance to really. But what I do is, really roll up my sleeves, connect the dots, ask the questions, and sort of read between the lines on a lot of the things that are occurring in the industry. We're still kind of developing a research platform, a more robust platform. So I haven't been publishing as much as I'd like to, but that's to come. But I think, it's a resource for investors to acclimate themselves with the industry. Hopefully what we put out is thought provoking. So whether or not you agree with a conclusion, you would have, all the ingredients, to come up with your own conclusion based upon the analysis that's done.
Right. And I know those research reports are pretty comprehensive and very time consuming. And I also know that there is a ton of information out there on cannabis and CBD and, business models and what works and 280E and what doesn't. In your opinion, what makes a trusted source when a consumer or an investor is starting to do their research and their due diligence? Like, how can you know that the information that you're getting is legit?
Well, that's a really good question, because you probably wouldn't be surprised, but some of the forecasts and the investor decks that are presented for these privately held companies, you wonder what they're smoking before they hand this stuff over to somebody, because it's really not really consistent with reality. I would say, what really is really the most important is to, this is how I approach when I look at contemplated investment opportunities, is really think, okay, this, first of all, where's the sector, the subsector, where's it headed? In other words, when laws change, will it still be around? So, for example, we know at some point, we first know that today, every state requires lab testing. You have to attest to the quality of the product, that there are no pesticides, contaminants, et cetera. But that's going to have to become standardized and standard protocols, across, every state. So that's a very important area. That's not going away. There's no way that under federal, when prohibition ends, that the federal government will allow these products to be consumed by consumers without any of this, you know, attestation. So, but conversely, there are some areas that will disappear. So, you know, there's this at the dispensaries, there are armed guards. There's a lot of companies, not a lot, but there's, you know, several companies that provide security, armed guards. When the banking laws change, that won't be necessary. So these are kind of the, you know, the higher level questions you have to ask. You know, why would I want to invest in a company that's not going to be around in another year?
Right.
And then, you know, what we're starting to see, though, now, the benefit of these companies going to Canada, those companies being the multi-state operators, now that they're public, they have to provide audited financial statements. And so now we're getting a little bit more transparency as to what's under the hood in some of these organizations. Then you could look for consistency. You could compare one company to the other and see if things start to, you know, start to make sense.
Yeah, no, that those are good tips. Those are really good tips. And so the last time we talked, you said by 2022, you expect every state in the country will have implemented either a medical only or fully legal cannabis market to reach $35 billion in retail sales. Do you feel like this is still true? I'll let you answer that first.
Yeah, well, I do think that with respect to the number, the states, that by 2022, every state will have implemented a medical only or fully legal. That I still have pretty strong conviction on. In terms of the numbers, I am revising my estimates downward, but I don't even think, and the reason being, you know, California has had implementation issues. We have a little bit of a delay in New York and New Jersey. But I do think, you know, where I fell short in my crystal ball, while I pegged, you know, some of the states right on, some of the states took a little longer to implement than I had thought. Like I thought really originally, like 5 years ago, that each state would learn best practices and really kind of accelerate, not necessarily the legalization, but the implementation of a program once it has been legalized. But having said that, I don't even think at this point in the game, it's really even relevant to look, you know, and say, oh, you know, hang my hat on a 4 or 5 year, because nobody, it really doesn't matter. What matters is how big the overall market is. Who cares really what happens by 2022? I think the more important question and the more, you know, important area to focus on is how big is the market at maturity? And we don't really know that. Nobody knows that. We can take educated guesses, and there's various public, you know, various firms that put different forecast numbers out. It's, you know, could be north of $100 billion if you factor in CBD products.
Right, right. And so, I mean, tell me, are the investment opportunities different on, say, the East Coast than the West Coast? Because I'm hearing, you know, the cultivation facilities on the East Coast are very sophisticated, you know, very expensive. And then, you know, obviously on the West Coast, you do have indoor grows, but you have a lot of farms. And so I'm just wondering if the investment opportunities are different depending on where you are in the country.
Well, you know, it depends how you define the investment opportunity.
Yeah.
So if you're really looking at, you know, the roots of the, you know, of the industry, that would be the cultivators, you know, the MSOs, right? So, and what we're seeing is sort of like these big, large, for those who don't know, MSO stands for multi-state operator. So you would have one company that would own licenses in multiple states. So it doesn't really matter what New York's doing versus California, because both of those properties or licenses could be owned by one entity where you invest directly into.
Gotcha.
So, but, you know, and every, it makes it very challenging. I mean, early on, that was a question. Really, the investment opportunity that everybody was gunning for is to get a license. This is, you know, well before the multi-state operators started stepping in and gobbling up, you know, these licenses. It was more of a mom and pop game. And then the question is, oh, well, where should we invest? Should we do it out in Colorado or, should, you know, wherever? And, you know, clearly, you know, probably the more lucrative area would be to invest in a state where there are limited licenses. Even so, there's still tremendous risk, because on a whim, the state legislation legislators can change laws and increase the number of licenses, so you would have, you know, you'd be automatically diluted.
Right. Okay. Gotcha. So you're in New York. Just a final question here. You know, what's going to be happening in New York and New Jersey? It's April 23rd, 2019. This is when we're talking. You know, obviously there's some bumps in the road. What's going to happen for that?
Both states will pass. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of really how they're going to pass and how they're going to regulate, not if they're going to regulate a legalized, fully legalized market. So it's, you know, I suspect that by the end of the year, this will be, you know, passed both in both states.
Okay. Well, Matt Carnes, thank you so much for being here today. Check it out, Green Wave Advisors.
Green Wave.
And thank you, Matt, for your time. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Great to speak with you.
Okay. Talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.